Hi, this is Glenn Mulcahy. Welcome to Love What You Play. Today we'll be featuring a talk from our 2018 Youth Sports Summer Summit, available at full of forloveofthegame.ca. Our mission is to help organizations, coaches, and sports leaders develop programs to ensure kids love the game more at the end of a season than they did at the beginning. Hi, this is Glenn Mulcahy. Thanks for joining us again for the Love of the Game's inaugural Digital Summit. The list of speakers I've had an opportunity to talk to the last few days is just absolutely amazing. And next up is another one of those amazing people, Allison Tufts, the author of Lessons from Behind the Glass. I connected with her about a year and a half ago, and she graciously sent me an autographed copy of her book. I read it in like 2 days. It's absolutely a must read for anybody in the hockey community, and I think anybody in sports in general, because of the humor and the wit that she adds to her son's journey and the hockey experience all the way from when he was 5 years old all the way through to major junior. Her background includes working in the not-for-profit sector, working for organizations like the United Way and hospices, which is I'm a big fan of because my mother spent time in a hospice before that palliative care was absolutely transitioned, helped me and my brother greatly. Was worked in human resources for a stint, then in social work, completed a diploma, is now back at contracting human resources. But her path has evolved to being a full-time, probably 80% of the time as an author, and also speaking and doing initiatives like 2 years ago, I believe it was, the video series for BC Hockey, and then Ontario, or is it Hockey, Eastern Ontario's video series, was it this season? And has recently just come back from Hockey New Brunswick's annual general meeting and spoke at that event. So I really appreciate you making time with your hectic schedule, Allison, to be part of the summit.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited.
Yeah, I'm excited too. So the questions that I've been asking are pretty similar with everybody I've talked to. And each one I've asked, you know, if you could give a little bit of background in terms of, because our whole format for this is for love of the game, is bringing us back to our childhood when we really loved sport and activity and free play. So maybe if you can give a little bit of insight of what your life was like growing up. And I believe, if I remember correctly, is it 6 or 7 brothers that you had? You've got a big family.
So I have 8 siblings. I have 3 brothers and then of course, 5 sisters. So we were raised in a typical Catholic big family home, and we spent our winters with a backyard rink, and I always dreamed of playing hockey, and my dad didn't think that it was a girl's sport. So I'm so happy that that's changed. He was a bit old fashioned and I always loved it. It was my time with him. I used to sit and watch games with him on Saturday nights, and I would spend time on the rink with him and my brothers, and often getting in the middle of the game, getting in their way because I wasn't a great hockey player, but I just loved the game. Yeah. And that's kind of what brought me to the book, the love of the game.
Wow. And so having, how many of your brothers went on to play, like say at a junior level, or did they stop at midget?
My oldest brother went on to play junior C. For a little while. And they always joke now because they were all small. They weren't big guys. But as they were growing up, they had the dream and they just kept trying. And my brother made it as far as junior hockey.
Yeah, it'd be nothing better than when I was growing up, I didn't have the backyard rink. That would have been phenomenal. But I did have access to outdoor rinks in Montreal whenever there was nobody there. A whole bunch of my buddies would just go, let's go play. And it would be like that. Let's go for an hour. And then that would be 2 hours and then 3 hours. And next thing you know, your parents are showing up with their cars and saying, you've got to come home and eat. You know, we've been at it for 5 or 6 hours. And that whole passion and playing just for the sake of playing, and Bobby Orr's story, you know, all that time you spent in Parry Sound, and kids don't have that anymore. And partly because the outdoor rinks aren't as prevalent as they were when we grew up because of global warming in part. And also the fees, I understand, to maintain them are even more costly than actually indoor rinks. So it's too bad that that's not part of our, that was then and this is now, right? So your book that you wrote was amazing. And I've been endorsing to everybody I've come across the last couple of years. But it goes through a series of highs and lows. So maybe from a hockey, maybe take it from the parent perspective or the reasons for, I guess, the the reasons for being, the reasons for writing the book. What was it, and how long did it take you to actually write the book?
It was sort of a happy accident. And what happened was I would go to my son's games, and once he decided to be a goalie, I was finding it so stressful to watch. And I used to want to talk to my husband at length about it after the games. I'd want to sit and talk in the car and talk to him, and why was he sad, or why wasn't he the starting goalie? And my husband, who had played hockey forever, just nicely said to me, "You know what? I'm not talking to you about this after every game. So we're going to have to sit, and you're going to have to find another way." So I wrote. I started writing, and that seemed to be kind of a bit therapeutic for me. And it turned into a book when I looked back on it.
One of the biggest challenges that people that aspire to write a book, I mean, I think everybody has that kind of innate drive. Oh, I'm going to write a book about this, write about this. But the biggest challenge we have, and I know some people that have written tons of books, even when they go to publish another, get refused over and over and over again from publishers. So how were you able to come across a publisher that would publish your story?
So I self-published it, to be honest with you. I self-published it myself. I didn't approach publishers about it because the odd person that I did talk to kind of said to me things like, "Wow, you're really telling an honest story. Are you not scared to put those things out there? Some of my behaviors and things like that." And I didn't want to change it. I wanted to tell an honest story from a hockey mom who got it wrong so that hopefully it would help other people. So I haven't sent it to publishers yet, to be honest with you. I self-published it and I've been doing it on my own. So I am at a point now where I think it is time to find a publisher and get it across Canada, but it's been going pretty well so far. So we'll see what happens.
And sometimes, I mean, I know there's a lot of people in the space that are actually recommending going that route. And if it gains momentum, which it has, I mean, since you've launched it, you've sold a few thousand copies now, correct? And from that, you've getting the momentum on your Facebook page, a lot of people following it. There's always a lot of people are loving what you did and why you did it. So the BC Hockeys and, you know, Hockey Eastern Ontario wouldn't have been reaching out if they didn't think it was something we need to be sharing in the hockey community, which is amazing. Tell me a little bit about the experience when you, or let me ask the question, who reached out to who? Was it BC Hockey reach out to you, or was it the other way around, say, "Hey, you know, I want you to do a video series on this"?
So I have a bit of a funny story. Years and years and years ago, my brother moved out west to play hockey. And, well, he moved out for a job, actually. And he started playing hockey. And he had a roommate that lived across the hall from him. And the guy's name was Tom Rennie. And so that was 30-some years ago. So when I wrote my book, my brother Brian said to me, "You need to send this book to Tom Rennie." And my first reaction was, "No way." And then I thought I'm going to. So I did. I sent it to him, and he got back to me and he said, "Would you come and speak at our sponsorship summit?" He said, "I'm looking for somebody to speak on behalf of a hockey mom." So I did. And from there, I got invited to Calgary to speak at Hockey Canada, and I spoke to their senior staff. And that's where I met Barry from BC Hockey. And he approached me and he said, "I want to work with you. I want to do something." And the more we talked, he said, "You know, I think it'd be good to do a PowerPoint presentation. Let's do a PowerPoint presentation for hockey parents." And I cringed and I said, "We can't do another PowerPoint presentation. We need to have honest stories from coaches, from players, from parents." I said, "Let's do a bit of a video series, a series of interviews." And luckily my son at the time, well, not lucky for him, he was injured, but at the time he came with me and we did a very honest, if you've seen any of it, a very honest video series on our experiences of what I did wrong. And he was pretty honest and vice versa. So it went well.
Yeah, I actually watched all of them as they were releasing them because I think it was the year, it was either a year or two after they made parent meetings mandatory. And then this was kind of a piggyback to Trevor Linden's, you know, parent education awareness campaign. But I'll never forget the first one. The first one when he talked about the ride home. And I was just like, yep, he nailed it. And I've never been that type of parent or coach because I wore both hats. Whenever my kids got in the car, I would just ask them, you know, what snack do you want to have? What music do you want to listen to? Did you have fun? That was pretty much the end of it. But then I've heard all these other stories over the years, especially in the last 5-10, where it's become so competitive and parents are expecting so much from the hockey experience, especially we want you to get to junior, we want an NCAA scholarship, you know, go to the NHL, when only like 0.05% of kids will even go to that level. So it was humorous seeing that and then sharing it in each one of the subsequent short clips. Like there were on average maybe 2-3 minutes, which for anybody that even has ADD, they could watch those videos and get a good sense of what it has. So was it similar when Hockey Eastern Ontario, did they reach out and say, hey, you know, we want to do a similar thing that BC Hockey did?
They did. So they had seen the series and they contacted me and they asked me to speak at their Hockey Harvest. And before I went to speak at the Hockey Harvest, they contacted and said, can you come in for a meeting? And so they wanted to do the same thing. And what was interesting about that series is by the time we did it, my son had been coaching AAA for a year. So he could even speak still from the perspective of a player, but now he was speaking to parents from the perspective of a player whose mom got it wrong, and from the perspective of a coach who kind of watched. And then I had kind of a few years behind me since the book had come out. So that series looks totally different, but the advice is still really good. It's amazing what you learn as you go through it, but it turned out really well.
Yeah. And it's also amazing how the momentum starts to carry. I've kind of gone through the same path too, as I've started reaching out and then people have started reaching out to me, and it's John O'Sullivan, who changed the game. He goes, the more you speak, the more you speak, which in essence is each time you go somewhere, someone will see, hey, this is great stuff, and they'll invite you to come speak, and sort of that whole domino effect. So then that leads to hometown hockey with Ron McLean. That to me, like, he's one of my big heroes, him and Don Cherry, Coach's Corner. Like, you're talking about watching Saturday Night Hockey. I'm like, what do I do that right for the next 4 months? There's no hockey. When it ended, it was like, and NBA ended the next day. So my wife goes, now what are you going to do? I don't know. So what was it like being part of that hometown hockey experience?
That was incredible. He is, and I mean, everybody says this, but he's genuinely the nicest man. And he remembers, you know, it was like I'd known him for a long time. And the most amazing part is the producer of the show came over to me and she said, you know, he actually read your book. He's not just saying he read your book. He really read your book because he had said how much he liked it. But right before that happened, my son was moving out west for a short time. And the day he left, I was feeling kind of sad, feeling a bit sorry for myself. And a friend of mine texted me and said, Don Cherry is talking about your book on his radio show right now. And I thought she was teasing me because I was having, and I said, no, he's not. She said, he's talking about your book. So I think Ron McLean had also passed it on to him, or the people at Hometown Hockey had passed it on to him. And Don Cherry ended up featuring it on his radio show. And he said, it needs to be in the hands of every parent in any sport. And, you know, just exactly what you said, it's a ripple effect, right? From Ron McLean to Don Cherry to the more you speak or the more people hear, the faster things spread. So yeah, Ron McLean was incredible. It was amazing to meet him and it was a great day.
That's just a little bit of a testimonial and a glowing endorsement when you get those two guys giving you kudos for that. So I expect you're going to be a little busy in the coming years to come. The next book is... So then that leads to Hockey New Brunswick, and you just recently came back from that, so hopefully it's fresh in mind. What was that experience like at their AGM?
It was amazing. It was really neat. Nick Jansen, the executive director, had reached out some time ago, and we went back and forth. And they weren't looking to do something as big as the video series, but they wanted to do something for the organization. So we have partnered to do an article series. So they will actually watch the BC hockey videos, but we'll do an article. And I said, bring to me some of the issues your associations are dealing with, and I'll write articles about them to go along with the series. So that'll start in the fall. But when I went, I got to meet Dr. Stephen Norris. And Stephen Norris, I want to get his title right. He's a sports scientist, and he's an advocate for grassroots holistic development of youth. And he was really interesting. That was incredible. And I always like going to those things because I'm amazed at the amount of people that volunteer their time for hockey, that are at those AGMs and they're there for a weekend. And you can hear them talking at all their tables and they are passionate about what they do and they're not getting paid anything for it. So it's always amazing. I love those events.
Yeah, anytime I go to, it doesn't matter if it's an AGM or a summit or a conference, I had the opportunity to speak at Coaches Association of Ontario's conference. And then there's not many of them in Canada. It's a multi-sport conference, so it's not specific to any sport. They bring in coaches and facilitators from every sport across the province. And there is like 250 people, and they're probably the most passionate people I've ever seen. And they were saying that, you know, a lot of these people have been coming to this conference, and this was their, if I remember correctly, their 13th year of running this conference. Some had been going every year for those 13 years, continuing to build on their, add to their tool basket, you know, their professional development, which is something that is still an, still kind of a work in progress, for lack of a better word, because we're still trying to recognize or have coaches recognize the importance of growing and developing. But when you have an opportunity to interact with people who are that passionate, it just kind of, you walk away from that weekend and go, all right, I'm going to take this on. So it would probably have been a great experience.
It's like a boost.
Yeah, it is. And it just keeps you going, especially when you go through the ebbs and flows and you're trying to make sure that you're making a difference. That's really what we're all trying to do, right? So switching hats, and then I'm just going to ask some other sidebar questions. What, based on your, maybe yours and your son's experience, what do you think the top three characteristics would be of great coaches, like the greatest coaches that your son or that you've have had an opportunity to interact with?
The biggest one is if they can check their ego at the door, and coaches that can admit when maybe if they've reacted poorly or done things that maybe they're not very proud of, that they can say that in front of their team and say, I apologize for the way I reacted last night, or I'm sorry if I got too carried away. And I think to have a coach that's very human to the players makes a big difference. I do think a coach, you have to be careful how close you get to parents. And I think I've often heard coaches, and I'm in agreement with this, that you go through the kids first. I do think there's a certain age where parents need a level of communication and knowing how to be able to put a barrier on that. Not, you don't want to be on the phone with them and texting them all the time. But I think a coach that knows kind of that teeter-totter and when it's appropriate and when it isn't. And I also think a coach that's trying to develop a good human being first, and the rest will come. You're trying to raise good young people, and the rest will come from there. And I think that's where we're missing things. And as a parent, I got really caught up in the other stuff too. And looking back, that's probably one of the things I'm most ashamed of, for sure.
Yeah, and it's not, you know, I've had an opportunity already of talking to so many amazing, and all my interaction over the years. I've always been a big believer that sport, it's the coaches in sport that develop character in people. And in lieu of focusing strictly on the wins and losses and the outcomes. And that's where the model is right now, because sports, all sports, not just hockey, is being so professionalized. And it's almost got that whole pay-to-play model and the travel tournaments and the academies and the clubs. And kids are not playing sports anymore. They're working the sports, which is a great quote from Wade Gilbert. And trying to bring that back, and which is the whole premise of what we're aspiring to do, is bring that free play, bring that love, that passion back to the sport. But in terms of, you know, developing great people, that's probably one of the key takeaways I've gotten from everybody, and the humility and owning up to mistakes. We all are going to make mistakes. And I, one of the questions I've asked a lot of people is, you know, how do we shave years of those mistakes, which we'll touch on a little bit later, but great answers. So you kind of touched on the whole parent interaction from a coach of coaches, and having done many, many clinics and workshops across the country, probably the number one ask I get all the time is, you know, how do I deal with parents? And it's like, okay, hang on a sec. You're not dealing with parents, because that's one of the problems you're having. The key is to engage them. So how, you know, what are some tips that you would say from both the parent perspective, now you've traveled across country and track, what can coaches do to better engage parents in the process?
I think to sort of start out the year with an understanding of how they would like to communicate. This is the way we see this going. And if there is a point in the year where you are so concerned about your child that maybe their actions are different, their behaviors are different, and you're concerned about them again as a person, then please come and see me and let's talk about that. If you're concerned about ice time, whether they're the starting goalie or not the starting goalie, or, you know, whether they're on the power play, that kind of thing, then I think you initially talk to your kids and try and teach them to first go to the coach and say, how can I be better? What could I be doing different? If that's happened, if at that point you're still struggling as a parent, I will talk to you once, but we won't talk about the same thing over and over and over again. I think one of the tough things for a coach is that sometimes parents don't like the response, so they just keep asking the question and keep asking the question. So that's where the parents need the support to get used to. If you don't like the response, well, sometimes your kids aren't where you think they are.
Do you think it's important right from the beginning of the season? Because I'm a big believer that that first parent meeting, that first interaction with parents is could be a deal breaker. If you don't run an effective parent meeting and then subsequent team meetings and parent and player meetings, you're probably setting yourself up for failure. You think that's really important?
I do. And I think a great question for a coach to ask, and not to say that they're going to deliver everything that, if a coach says to parents, what do you need from me so that we can get through this year and do the best for our kids, for your kids and the kids that I'm coaching? And then the parents can, at that meeting, kind of have an open, well, I'd like to know this. And then the coach can say, well, this is what I can offer. This is how far that I can go with that. So both have kind of been able to come together. This is what we've compromised on, and this is how it's going to go going forward. But to go in and say, I don't ever deal with parents, you know, and I think that it does make your back go up. As kids get older, you really should be going through the players first. But some of these kids are, like you said, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8. You can't walk into that and say, I'm not dealing with parents.
I had a parent came to me a couple of years ago and shared an analogy. I can't use the language because it's not appropriate for this forum, but they literally said, you know, my son had a coach, and this was in rep hockey, and he'd been coaching for years, like 15, 20 years, whatever the case may be. And we had the parent meeting, and he walked into the parent meeting. He said, I'm just going to tell you all, I don't deal with effing parents. And then he walked out. And they were all like,
And how did that year go?
So the manager of the team was kind of standing there speechless. The other assistant coaches were set and they were like beside themselves. They were like, how could he be coaching kids and not understand the importance, especially in this day and age? You know, the talk I actually did in Ontario is how to coach Generation Z. This generation of kids, more than any other generation, are extremely close to their parents. So they're your allies. If you want them to bring it up a notch in games and you're seeing some behavioral stuff or whatever the case may be, because there's always going to be kids that have some ebbs and flows, right? You have to be able to have an open dialogue with parents. If you disregard them or, you know, pretend that they don't exist, all you're going to do is set yourself up for failure.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, so from a coach standpoint, your son had a lot of coaches, and I know your husband is actually still coaching. I read a great post that you did. Is he now retired from coaching, or is he still going to continue coaching that your son's removed from the game?
So he just finished his fourth year of AAA, coaching AAA kids here. And the last 2 years were kids going into their draft year. So crazy. That's a whole other book, I'll tell you. But we have just moved out to the country, which meant him giving up coaching. And I don't know how long he'll last. I would imagine in a year or two, he's going to start looking for another team. He loved it. He loved it. I always thought he just loved it because it was our son. But he loved it because he loved seeing the kids develop. He loves the sport. So I don't really see him ever giving it up. I think I get a year break, but that's probably about it.
Yeah, being the other half of a coach is always a tough go. I'm very, very lucky with my wife. She goes, yeah, you got to do this, you got to do that. I get it, because there's so much time behind the scenes that goes on that a lot of people don't recognize, except when you are that, you know, other half of that coach, of how much time they've committed to this team. And then you talked about volunteers earlier. I mean, I don't think, other than managers, I don't think there's anybody else involved in those teams that spends more time to help those kids become better people and better at their craft. So I can kind of relate, because the last, I'm still coaching ball hockey, my son is 19 now, and he's probably going to go into that recreation stream. So my hope for him is he actually continues to play hockey, at least with his buddies, beyond the junior level. But everybody's asking me, well, what are you going to do now? Are you going to continue coaching? Well, now I'm coaching coaches, and two of the people I've talked to, that's
good
what they
you.
Do. And my reach when I first started, like from the BC hockey perspective, running clinics, my goal with those clinics is I thought, okay, if I can get 10,000 coaches, I know that's a lofty aspiration. If I get 10,000 through my clinics, that means I reached 150,000 kids, which is 25% of the, at the time, Hockey Canada's membership. But then as I went through that for the last 8-9 years, and I'm averaging 400 a year and I'm about 4,000, I'm like, this isn't going to be fast enough. I've got to get out to more coaches and more organizations. And that's the whole reason why I'm doing what I'm doing. But that whole interaction with coaches that first get started and they put their hand up and you ask them why they're coaching. Well, I'm coaching because my son or daughter is playing the team. And it's kind of like when your husband probably started way, way back when, and many of them get started. And the first thing I throw back at them is, okay, you're what, 2 weeks into the season, 3 months into the season, depending on when we do the clinic. You did realize soon after that you adopted 14 or 15 other kids. And they kind of go, yep. And I said, and you're now doing it not just because of your son or daughter, you're doing it for all of them, right? Yep. And it's like that seed just gets planted and you just end up loving it. If everything goes according to plan, so to speak, and you don't have a lot of the challenges we deal with. But it is something you just love doing. And that's the way we make a difference. We help those kids develop into adults, right? Okay, so next question.
I love that comment about saying.
About which?
I love the comment you just said about letting the coach know you now have adopted more kids. That's so true. That's a great way to put it to them, right?
Yeah, because, and what my main goal is whenever I'm, whether it be a clinic or a workshop or a talk, is to help coaches shave 5 years off their curve. And because the average, and this comes from Corey McNabb, when we did a summit last year and he attended it, he said the average coaching career for hockey is about 5 years. So if coaches in hockey are only at it for 5 years and they're making a ton of mistakes during that path, it's really just going to create that domino effect where it's going to hurt kids more than it's going to help them. So that's the whole reason we try to plant that seed and shift that kind of mindset. It's like another analogy, and it was actually sad. I did a clinic, where was it? It was up north, I think Fort Nelson, and there was not that many coaches in the clinic. It was like 9-10, it's a small organization. And I shared the analogy about the ride home. And if you are a parent coach on your team, the biggest challenge that you have is when do you put that coach hat on and when do you take it off and become the parent hat? When you get in that car, either to or from, because a lot of people talk from the ride, like the ride home, but it's also on your way to the, either a rink or a ball field or whatever the case may be. That's when your parent hat's on, and that's when you listen to music and you have snacks and you're just, you know, smiling and joking. As soon as you get out and you leave that facility, you got to put that parent hat back on, because many parent coaches, it's hard for them to separate that. And they'll be walking to the court, and even not with the best of intentions, they may still be coaching their kids en route, and they continue to coach kind of like that ride home where parents are doing the same thing when they get in the car. I don't want to get my headphones on, right? We don't do it out of, being malicious, but I think many people do it out of love. They want the best for their kids. And that's really what kind of has come up with a lot of people is parents truly, as you would have your son, and love their kids and they want the best for their kids. But sometimes we do things and a little misguided. And that's why I loved your book, because you kind of admitted, hey, you know, I wasn't perfect, which was actually brilliant, because none of us are perfect. And we've all kind of gone down this path where we're trying to, and then now in retrospect, I guess, fix the glitches that we caused in the past. But I think it's going to be a great journey for all of us. So what do you think, and from the, either you use it just the hockey world or in general, because now that you're starting to talk to all these different organizations, what do you think the top three issues that are facing youth sports or hockey in general? Because attrition is one of the biggest hot topics in the youth sports segment worldwide, and 70% of kids are quitting sports on average before they even get into high school. So what do you think the top three are?
I think, well, the first one, and it's why I wrote the book, is adult behavior around the sport, be it a parent or the other adults around it. The second one, I think, is unfortunately just for kids, they're spending more time inside and on devices, and they're not getting out to play enough. And that's really devastating. And the third one, I think, is money for a lot of parents. I don't think parents can afford to put their kids into sports. And I think some of the reason is they're looking at these kids taking all these clinics, doing all these extra things, and thinking, this is what I have to do. If I'm going to put my child into this sport, I need all this money to do the extra. If somebody is good enough, the right person is going to find them, given those clinics or not. So I think for me, those would be the top three.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. That the cost of hockey as the most expensive team sport in Canada is really pushing a lot of families out of what was Canada's game. I mean, it was our game and has been for many, many years, but now the number one team sport in Canada is soccer. It succeeded hockey by about 50,000 kids in registrations and continues to grow. Hockey as a whole has grown because largely in part because of female participation. It's just exploded the last 5 to 10 years. And that's helped with the growth. Yay. But it's not great when you – I love the game. I've always loved the game since I was like three. That's when I put my skates on. I started skating on those outdoor ponds and all the way through. But when kids are and families are facing, say, in a rep stream, which is where my son was from the Atom all the way up to midget, on average, if you're playing on a triple, like I have to use the acronyms that will equate to the country, because in Eastern Ontario, you use AAA and AA and single A. We use A1, 2, 3. And so let's just call it from a AAA perspective. So that'd be the top tier rep team. On average, parents are spending $8,000 a year. $8,000 a year for a kid to play hockey. That's a lot of money. And then what a lot of coaches are not really cluing into is how they're compounding that cost with travel tournaments. And, you know, I've argued with a lot of coaches, even my son's midget coach in his last year, they wanted to do a travel tournament to Colorado when the dollar was $1.04. So every parent was going to be on the hook with an additional $3,000. That's an incredible amount of money when you think about it. And then you compound that in the hockey world and many other sports where the academies have started to explode. So you're looking at $15,000, $20,000, $25,000, $30,000 a year. Like that should be their entire sporting journey, not for one season. So I think it's an unrealistic expectation. And you said they're adding the clinics and it becomes – I have many come to you and have shared kind of concerns about how hockey season has gone too long. And then when you're adding the spring and the seasonality in the clinics, it becomes a year round. Is that something that's been a hot topic whenever you've been talking with people or no?
Yeah. Yeah. We've certainly had that conversation. I wrote an article called To Play or Not to Play. And it was talking about whether you play summer hockey. And I do need to say, going back to the conversation about cost, my son played rep ball. And we traveled all over the place for rep ball. And it was also very, very expensive. So it isn't just hockey that's costing so much. And we have to remember, as adults, we make the choice what we're signing them up for. So if we are going to sign our kids up and pay all that out and then say we can't afford it anymore, we have a choice if we want to keep them in house league, so, or a church league where it's not going to cost as much money. So our kids don't have to miss out, but it's us that maybe decides that we need to keep going and keep going and keep going. I don't think an 8 or 9 or 10 year old realizes what kind of money we're spending. But as far as sports all year long, or hockey or one sport all year long, I did write an article about it. And what it came down to for us is, as my son got older — we didn't do it when he was really, really young — but as he got older, when he was 13, 14, and was still loving the game and still really wanting to push forward, he came to us and wanted to play in the summer. And so what we did is we made it our summer vacation. We'd go to a tournament and then off to Darien Lake, or we'd, you know, made it so it was still family time. And we sort of let him steer the ship at that point, because we knew at that point, if you're still into it and you're still loving it, then it's not us pushing you. So yeah. It's a tough one. I think when your kids are really little, no, we did a lot of cottaging and camping and fun stuff when they were little. When they get older and they're still pushing and trying to move towards something, then you decide with them.
And what age was that when he kind of hinted that's where he wanted to go? This is when you're talking baseball, so spring and then summer. What age would that have happened for him?
No, I was referring to hockey when I was saying when he wanted to keep going with hockey. So when he played rep ball, he was about 10 and 11 when he was playing rep ball. And then when he made AAA, the year he made AAA, he was 14. Then he wanted to do more summer hockey and really pursue that. And going into his draft year, he kind of had aspirations of what he wanted to do. And so then it became hockey in the summer.
So that'd be probably later teens though, 15, 16, which is really kind of the ideal model when you would pick that sport in lieu of what's currently happening, 6, 7 years old, where kids are being pigeonholed into the one sport. I contribute to an article that to this day, I can't believe how widespread it went. When it dropped, it was front page news and I think it was Easter Sunday. And I shared out the digital edition. Almost every day I looked at my social media accounts, there was another 1,000 people I had reached. By the end of it, it was like tens of thousands, and it went all across the world. People are sharing it out in Australia, New Zealand. I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. But that specialization is probably the biggest hot topic, if not, well, I'd say it's one of the top three for sure. And when do they make that decision? I've always been a big believer. Wait until you're in a senior or ultimately in senior high school. So either, 16, 17, that's when you pull the trigger and okay, this is where the path I'm going to go. And some of you even on the summit that I've talked to some Olympians, they didn't specialize until their 20s. They just kept doing a whole bunch of different sports to become the best athletes they can become. And that's ultimately an ideal path because then you go into that sport with passion and vigor instead of going into it like, hey, it's been work for the last 10 years. So I've got some rapid fire questions.
Yeah.
What would you, what do you think, let me rephrase it. How can we ensure that kids love a sport more at the end of a season than they did at the beginning of the season?
So I don't know if you can ensure that. I think you can make sure that you're being very supportive, that they get to the rink on time, that you're taking any stress away from it. But ultimately, a child has to decide whether they love it or they don't. You can do everything right. They can have a great coach. They can have a great team around them. They're either going to love the sport or they don't. And I think that's where we get mixed up is when we try to make it so it's all perfect for them and it's going to go well. At the end of the day, I think they're going to decide whether they love it or not. I think there's a lot of things you can do to make sure that they're comfortable and happy and enjoying it. But whether they love it or not, it's ultimately going to be up to them. I don't know if that's what you're looking for.
It's a great answer because I think you kind of nail it on the head because there's another hot topic is the whole participation trophy concept. You know, in order to get kids to participate in the sport, we've got to give them a trophy. No one, gets first, second, or third. Everybody gets the same. But the reality is, when I grew up, that was a driver for me. I'm very competitive. I wanted to go for that first or second or third. That's a whole Olympic model, what have you. And that trophy or the medal is all about the intrinsic motivation. That love that you have for a sport or activity. Mm-hmm. And if we're not fostering it as parents and or coaches, where I'm trying to go with that questioning has kind of sense for is it has to come from that kid instead of keeping up with the Joneses and saying, we're going to keep putting you into this sport because everybody else is, and you're going to keep playing on this AAA team because everybody else is, and we're going to spend thousands and thousands of dollars. Mm-hmm. But at no point, when I've talked to a lot of parents that said, hey, we got caught up in this whirlwind, have they actually come back and said, we never actually sat down with our son or daughter and said, what do you want to do? And that's what's missing. They're not asking them every year, do you want to keep playing hockey? Do you want to keep playing at this level? Do you want to try something different? And I didn't, honestly, I was one of those parents. I just assumed, and until my son at 15 years old said, I don't want to play hockey anymore. And I was like, what? What do you mean you don't want to play hockey? And he gave me all the reasons why. And that's what started me down this path like 5 years ago. Okay, it's not fun anymore. There's too much craziness in the stands. Some of the coaches, took it a little over the top, thought they were coaching the NHL, short benches. And the list just goes on and on and on. These are all the issues that are affecting and what's leading to the quitting. So I even have gone down that path. And I'm, happier now that I've kind of done all the research, but I'm sad that I didn't ask those questions sooner. And that's what I definitely encourage a lot of parents to do. Ask your son or daughter every year before you put them in a sport, do they want to keep playing?
And I think, you touched on that video that Brock and I did. where it was the opening scene, and I said to Brock, this is not scripted, be honest. And it was the first video when we were sitting, we had all the lights on around us, and I was feeling all proud we were doing this video series. And the very first question they asked was, what do you think you did well as a hockey mom? And I go on to say, I think I did the car rides well. And you could see his facial expression while I'm saying it. And he says, I hated the car rides. And my reaction was to say, cut. And after, we kept it in there because I thought to myself, why did I wait till he was 18 years old to have these conversations with him? And it was the same as what you just said. It's what drove me to get the book and get this message out there, because people have an opportunity. Talk to your kids. Ask what you're doing wrong. It's that whole topic we talked about with the coaches of not having an ego. Check your ego at the door. And if you've made a mistake, let the kids know. The same as a parent. If I'm not doing this right, if there's ways that you, things you need from me, tell me. And I just think that will change the experience for them.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And one of the biggest challenges we face is that, you know, one of the driving factor of the kids play is because it's fun and they're quitting because it's not. And the top five reasons I've identified, and I can relate to them all too well, because I've been asking my teams for years, you know, why are you playing hockey or why are you playing baseball? What's fun about it? What's not fun about it? And when Madame Vesic did her research, I think 2014 when it came out, and it's groundbreaking because she asked all these kids. And the top five reasons why kids are playing sports is when they have an opportunity to try their best. So they get to work on their skills, which is a big one. When coaches treat them with respect, which is another big one. And the one that's very personal to me, when they get playing time, kids just want to play. You know, 90% of kids would rather play on a losing team in all situations than what's happening a lot in the hockey world and on many other higher level sports. When they get competitive, coaches are running short benches, and there's, you know, these kids are sitting there like, hang on a sec. And when play well or get along as teammates. But where we're focusing our energies as adults is on the bottom, like, I think it's 15 or 16 of the issues that are, or the things that they identified as fun. One being is tournaments. Another is the travel, the medals and the trophies. And the big one is working with a specialty trainer. So that's the least fun, but that's where we as parents and as coaches and the adults in the space, we're spending all of our money. We're putting it all into that vested interest, but we're not thinking, okay, what are the top five? We should be focusing, you know, we got to shift our model and go back to why they play and what their motivations are instead of on the back end.
Yeah. There's a part in the book where I talk about parents think the reward of hockey is if their child makes it to the NHL or makes that next team or gains a scholarship, and that's what they're driving for. That's not the reward. The reward is the lessons that they learn through this, the teammates, how they learn to get cut from a team. They're not going to get every job that they apply for. You know, when you talk about having medals and for participation and that kind of thing, how does that help your child when they go out to get their first job they apply for and they don't get it? They're going to think that, well, shouldn't everybody have gotten the job? No, it's not how it works. And I think hockey is a great way to set you up. It teaches you resilience.
Yeah, how to handle adversity. And if the coaches are doing their jobs right, and the communication, and the leadership, and selflessness. And one of the big ones that for the last few years that – depending on this, it doesn't matter what sport it is, I find a lot of kids today don't recognize the importance of respecting either themselves, their teammates, the coaches, or just the game in general. And, you know, whether you have the excessive celebrations when a team is up 5 or 6 goals, or you're, you know, kicking somebody when they're down, that just puts me off the deep end. Like, I'm just like, what happened to winning with humility and losing with dignity? That's something that's missing, and the sportsmanship or lack thereof. Those two things are something we really got to bring back to just sports in general, because it's kind of gone the way of the dodo bird. And that's the whole reason why, I think it was 2004 when Hockey Canada joined up with USA Hockey, and they did that Relax as just a game series. And it's kind of the funny anecdotes where the kids are screaming at the parents. And my most favorite one is when the dad shows the kid how to play hide and seek, and he pulls up the man, this is how you do it, you know, like, and all these other great videos. But fast forward 14 years later, has it really changed much? Not really. If anything, it's gotten worse. And we still need to kind of bring that, you know, we've got to bring it back to the kids, because it's really supposed to be youth sports instead of adults competing with other adults.
I agree, and I think parents forget how that feels to have somebody treating you like you're not doing well enough if you're doing your best. It's like you being at a job and somebody saying, why aren't you promoted? Why aren't you doing better? Day after, you should be doing this. Why aren't you staying at work longer? Could you imagine hearing that every time you went into work? Yeah. You know, with our kids, sometimes the night before a game, we're saying, make sure you eat a good meal before the game. Then they get up in the morning, you say, have a good breakfast before the game. Then you talk to them all the way to the car. Then they get to the game, they talk to their coach before, in between periods. Then at the end of the game, they talk to their coach again. And then they get to talk to you on the car on the way home. They are well ready to play. And we don't need to be in their ear all the time.
Yeah, there's a lot of solace, I guess, for lack of a better word, in terms of giving them time for their headspace. And with all the teams I've coached, they really should be ready for that game, not as they arrive at the facility or the rink or the field or what have you. They should be ready for that game as they get in the car en route to that game. So that's when their mind should be kicking in. Okay, it's game day. Let's show up with a game face and let's get ready. If you watch all the players that show up for, you know, NHL, the NBA playoffs, as they were showing up, they had their game faces on. So I've got some rapid fire questions. What would be a book that you would recommend to coaches that you would think would be a great read?
I don't have one, to be honest with you. I'd love it if they read Lessons from Behind the Glass. I could say that.
Your own stuff. I'm okay with that.
There you go. No, honestly, I think after listening to Dr. Norris, I think any chance to Google him or to hear what he has to say about how adults are seeing the game and how it's affecting kids, I would highly recommend, or if you can hear him speak, I would recommend anything that he has to say.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of Steve. We were at a conference together from Sport for Life, and there was a long-term athletic development symposium on the last day, and he went up and he started doing, talking about the challenge we were facing in sport, and I totally agree with everything that he's been doing. For the people that are watching this, if you Google, I think it was Steve and Corey McNabb, and there might have been one other speaker that actually spoke for Hockey Ontario, if I'm not mistaken, and he did an hour presentation, which is available through Google instead of having to travel to a conference. That's a good option as well. But he's a brilliant speaker, and he's very, very honest about how he comes across the message. There's no hiding between the lines. He jumps right at it. So it's really important that we start getting to that point. From a hockey parent / wife of a coach perspective, what would be your number one tip for coaches that are just putting their hand up and say, I'm going to coach this game? What recommendation would you give to them to help them shave 5 years off their learning curve? They're just getting started.
For coaches. I think exactly what you said. Start your year, start as you intend to finish. So, and I would start with all the parents and let them know that I am available, but this is how I am available. And I would be very clear on the lines of when they can talk to you, and you are open to help, and you're there for your child, and you want to see them develop. But just make it clear how you want that to look. I've had many situations with my husband when he started coaching that we would be in a hotel going to go out for dinner after he'd spent the whole day in the rink and I hadn't seen him for, weeks.
Yep.
And we'd be going out for dinner and people would be talking to him in the elevator and cornering him on the way to the parking lot. Don't do that. And for coaches, I think they need to set that up with the parents so they have an understanding.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I mean, it's that whole chain of communication. How it's going to trickle down to the coach. Mm-hmm. But one of my musts in every parent meeting is no emails. I will not allow parents to send me emails, because what happens with an email, sometimes it'll get taken out of context. And there's nothing worse than an email going viral, like when it just does this. And I've seen many of those. I'd rather have face-to-face communication is the best way to resolve any issues. But because of the way I've communicated and I've been proactive, and I believe 99% of the cure is, being proactive, I've not really had those parent challenges that a lot of coaches have come to me for, because I've said, it's all about that engagement process, the communication. You got to remember there's all the stakeholders in the process. And I guess the last part of what I want to ask you in all the, now that you've interacted with these various governing bodies across the country, what is being done, if anything, on the attrition that we're seeing with officials in use in hockey? As the number is about 33% of those kids that are getting into as officials, they're quitting every year. So how can we reverse those trends?
That's such a great question. We did, when we did the video series, lesson four in the video series was all about our officials. And we interviewed officials and we interviewed, talked to them about some of their experiences. And some of them were older officials, but I will never forget, we interviewed a young man and he was about, I'd say 15. And he had an experience where he had to be escorted out of the rink by police because of the behavior from the parents and just how scary it was. And you know, when you watched him talk, you could tell he really loved refereeing. He loved being an official, but this was something that would potentially take him out of the game. So the whole point of the video was to try and raise awareness. And I think, I honestly believe that if you want to change parents' behavior towards officials, I think parents need to start being responsible for a penalty during a game. If they're getting really bad, if their behavior in the rink is really, really bad, then maybe they're responsible for a penalty. And the other parents will soon turn on them and won't let them conduct themselves in that way, I believe. And that's just my opinion. But I think raising awareness, letting officials have some kind of platform where officials can tell their stories and people can hear what it's really like to be on the other end of that.
Yeah, because it's not... Everybody talks about the parental behavior. They talk about the coach behavior, the challenge, the attrition that kids are having. But I think the whole official segment has been neglected. I think you're seeing it vastly in the U.S., and I think it's going to trickle into Canada. There's many states now that are reporting that they are suffering such severe shortages of referees and officials that many of their youth sports are in jeopardy as a result of that. It's not just kids not wanting to play those sports. It's finding people to officiate. They're part of the stakeholders. So I've always looked at that as they're part of the team and they're the ones that should be respected. They're learning too. That's the biggest thing that a lot of parents don't understand. Most of these officials, 13, 14, 15, they're learning the game as much as the kids that they're officiating, and they're usually only a couple of years older than them. So I don't disagree. We've got to figure out some kind of a punitive penalty system that will work for all parties concerned. Another is asking them just merely to leave the facility, period. No exception, like you would ask a coach that's being too vocal. Please leave the facility, calm down, you know, take a breather. And we know it's an emotional game, but we have to be able to figure out how to police that aspect of it, because too many kids themselves, the players are quitting, and the officials, they shouldn't be victims of abuse or be escorted from the rink by police because they're fear of what's going to happen to them. That I don't agree with in any shape, aspect, or form.
Yeah, I agree. I agree.
Okay, so I think you've answered all the rapid fire. So what's in the works for what are you working on for second half of this year going to 2019?
Well, some exciting. This has been very exciting. I'm so glad you had me be part of this with you. So thank you. And I'm also come fall in September, I'll start the series with New Brunswick, with Hockey New Brunswick. So all other association will get the articles and the videos. So every time I can get a new province on board, my goal is to get every province across Canada. So we're getting there. So that's starting. And Hockey Eastern Ontario has contacted me and they've asked me to continue with them as well. And I'm going to be doing an article series for them. And they're going to be showing their videos again this year, which is very exciting. And a big one for me is Hockey Canada put the videos, the BC Hockey videos, on their Hockey Canada app. They wanted to try it out. And we started with two. They ended up putting all 10 of them on, and they're going to run them again this year. So that's what's ahead so far on the hockey end of things. Personally, I'm going to write some more books, do some more writing, and I hope to do some work with Canadian Mental Health on suicide prevention for kids. That's another passion of mine.
It's also a passion for me as well, because I sadly, my kids actually know two. One was in school, one was in their drama class, 15 and 16 years old, that committed suicide. But where it got real personal for me is one of the kids I actually coached in rugby when he was 13, when he was 15, committed suicide. And I was just like, my whole platform, my tagline is don't be a kid's last coach. And I lost it. I literally, for the whole month of May when it happened, was it last year or the year before? It was last year. My son, he actually committed suicide the day my son's graduation class happened. And obviously to make an impact. But suicide for adolescents, and one of the things we can benefit from sport and what I've been advocating is how kids are not able to handle adversity and they're not resilient like we were when we grew up. That whole going through the whole cuts of structure and what have you, kids aren't going through that to the level that they should because they've just hanging up their skates or their cleats before 13. And that social development era that I believe in from 13 to 18, that's what they're missing out on. It's the motor skill development happens from 6 to 12. It's the social development that happens beyond that. And if coaches have those kids through that pipeline, we got to do the best we can to ensure that we've teaching these life lessons to prepare them for the real world and not lose any more kids. So I think it's the second leading cause of death for adolescents or third. I was just reading another article that it just saddens me. So that'd be great work.
Yeah, it's I know we are certainly facing an epidemic here in our area, and it's horrible. And I couldn't agree with you more. I think if kids have a community around them, and sometimes that community looks like a team, you can get a lot of support from that, and you can learn a lot from that. And as coaches, you know, as you said, you never want to be their last coach. And I think sometimes you can do your absolute best, and the outcome is going to be the outcome. But one of the things I said at Hockey New Brunswick to the whole group is if you see someone who is a little off or seems a little off or doesn't seem like themselves, ask them, talk to their parents, don't ignore it. Yeah. Make sure that you take a moment to pull the child aside and say, is everything okay?
Yeah, I mean, the awareness and now the education has to kick in. How do we identify those risk factors? I don't think there's been enough. And then there's so many other things that we have to do as coaches, but that's something that has to be kind of part of it. Like you got to zero in on that to make sure the kids are having a positive experience. And if there is something that is affecting, and Mike Babcock is one of those ones that's jumped on the bandwagon to create the mental health instead of the mental illness awareness and remove the negative stigma. So we've got some work to do on that. So if anybody wants to reach out to you to get you involved in some way, aspect or form, what's the best way of connecting with Allison? And do you have any website, social media that you'd like to refer people to?
I do. So my website is www.lessonsfrombehindtheglass.com. And you can also email me at allisontufts1@gmail.com. And or if you can call me directly as well. And all my contact information is on my website.
Perfect. Well, thanks for taking the time out of your crazy schedule. I'm glad we were able to get this internet to work in your new cottage. A little choppy at times, but the audio was flawless all the way through like we talked about. But for everybody that's watching this, Allison jumped on this Zoom call from where about? You're the outskirts now. How far is it from Ottawa now in the cottage area?
So I'm about an hour and a half from Ottawa. I'm on a little lake called Chipago Lake out here. It's a beautiful, beautiful day out here, but it has its challenges for sure.
Yeah, the irony is it shows you how the world's evolving in terms of the internet, that now we can access it in a cottage area where I grew up a lot, and I never even thought we'd be here this time. But thanks again for joining us. I really enjoyed our chat.
I did too. Thanks so much.
Thanks for joining us this week. You can find us on Facebook for Love of the Game, Twitter, TLOTG Conference, and forlovethegame.ca. We'll see you next week for an all-new episode.